Blog Talk Radio.
I appreciate each and every last one of you guys. You just don't know. The past year and a half have definitely been a great and a positive experience, and I never could have had it without you, everyone, each one of you. But, and that's good, bad, or indifferent. How about that? Because, again, I do enjoy people who have opposing viewpoints. It makes it quite interesting. It makes me think, and I hope that, you know, in turn, we do the same thing. Because we are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. That's the purpose of this show. And, you know, we've done several shows over the past year and a half, and I've enjoyed, you know, each and every show. You know, some shows have been a little bit, you know, quote-unquote lively than others. It's interesting, but, you know, we've had some wonderful people as guests and, you know, guest co-hosts, and, you know, they're all wonderful people, and I thank them for what they did bring and contribute to the show and what they will bring and contribute to the show. Our theme song was written by Amani the Misfit, wonderful young man from the East Coast over there. Check him out, Amani the Misfit. The song can be downloaded from iTunes as well. And so someone asked a question in the chat room, so I wanted to make sure that you all knew where you could get that information. There are a lot of things going on in the Free Thought community. I just tell you guys, just be out there. Keep your eyes open. If you see anything interesting, let me know. I do announcements here and there to let everybody know what's happening. Well, Occupation Wall Street, they have a new program called Rolling Jubilee. RollingJubilee.org, RollingJubilee.org. And what they're doing is they are canceling debts. They are buying up debts and canceling them out for people. It's a project that they have that they're working on, and it's fantastic. It looks like a very good program, and I know we're going to make a donation, both Black Nonbelievers in Chicago as well as Black Freethinkers. You know, we'll be making contributions under both headers there. So just kind of let you guys know. But in addition to that, hey, National Day of Solidarity for Black Nonbelievers, last Sunday of February. The last Sunday of February, the National Day of, sorry guys, brain fart there, but the last Sunday in February will be the national campaign for the National Day of Solidarity for Black Nonbelievers. And this includes everyone, not just Black Nonbelievers, everybody. Everybody is included, everybody is welcome. Just kind of giving you guys a heads up. If there are groups in your area, and it doesn't even have to be a group, it can just be a couple of people getting together to sit down and enjoy some conversation. You can go to your coffee shop and sit down and just talk, coffee, tea, whatever, and with one another. It's just a matter of reaching out, branching out, and speaking to other people and developing relationships and supporting one another. And more information will be brought forth soon. Matter of fact, I am the national chair for that campaign this year. So, you know, we're going to be incorporating a lot more technology, and I will keep you guys updated on that. But Mr. Donald Wright, wonderful gentleman. If you all get a chance to look him up, please do. But this is his baby. This is his brainchild. He thought of this program, this campaign, and each year it has gotten even more successful. So, guys, definitely check that out. So I'm looking forward to all of that. And so, as we go on, our guest call-in number is 310-982-4273. Again, it's 310-982-4273. If you would like to Skype in, there's a big blue S next to the number. And forward we go. Today's topic: Biblical History, Part 3 of our series, Did Jesus Exist? Now, I'm going to come from this two different directions here. The answer to the question is no. Jesus, the Jesus that you've been taught, the biblical Jesus, never existed. Never existed. And there's evidence citing that some of the information, because a lot of Christians, they like to cite Tacitus and Flavius, and particularly in regards to Flavius Josephus, or Josephus, as some people like to call him, the entries were fraud. The church held the right, and it was inserted by a scribe. But, you know, we'll get into that a little bit later. But before I get into that, I actually would like to read a quote from Voltaire. And basically, he said, "Christian, a good-natured, simple fellow, a true lamb of the fold, who, in the innocence of his heart, persuades himself that he firmly believes unbelievable things that his priests have told him to believe, especially those he cannot even imagine. Consequently, he is convinced that 3 X's make 15, that God was made man, that he was hanged and rose to life again, that priests cannot lie, and that all who do not believe in peace will be damned without remission." And I am also going to read another quote from Voltaire. And it says, "Let us therefore reject all superstition in order to become more human. But in speaking against fanaticism, let us not imitate the fanatics. They are sick men in delirium who want to chastise their doctors. Let us assuage their ills and never embitter them. Let us pour drop by drop into their souls the divine balm of toleration, which they would reject with horror if it were offered to them all at once." So that was by Voltaire. If you all actually, you know, want to read a little bit more about him, just do some searching and you'll be able to find some information. Voltaire blew the lid off of this during the Enlightenment period. And I'm going to talk a little bit later, just briefly, about the European Reformation and Enlightenment period. because I believe that it's important that we have this in context and that you kind of understand a little bit of the history behind this. But before I get started on that, you know, I want to kind of address a few things here. And this has bothered me for a while, and I've spoken about it on several different occasions, but, you know, I'm going to say it again. But, you know, to some of the atheists and anti-theists, non-believers, whatever you're calling yourself out there, we have to do better. And not all atheists are rational thinkers. Let me put that out front as well. And, you know, there are some atheists that have a problem with this topic altogether and basically saying, you know, why are we beating a dead horse? Again, it's that arrogance. That arrogance right there that gives us a bad reputation. And then you wonder why Christians won't talk to us or talk to you. Or if they do, they come out of the gate being very defensive or, you know, attacking us. You need to grow up. The world does not revolve around you and your beliefs. There are people out here who believe other things. And if you have all of the answers, then where is your book? I'll promote it. But you have all the answers. You should be able to bring about world because you're that intelligent. And if you have all of the answers, then how did you get caught up in religion in the first place? What we have to do is we have to remember that we have all types of people around us. We have people at different levels. We have people that are on the fence. We have people that do not believe. We have some people that do believe, but they don't believe certain parts of it. So we have to take all of that into consideration. And we are here to educate and inform people. You know, so, you know, instead of, you know, being a distraction or just trying to be antagonistic, maybe you should help us so that we can educate and inform people about these things. Not everybody knows that Jesus did make this. Okay, they don't know that. They're trying to get a better understanding, but it doesn't help when they're just fighting amongst each other, which is why I don't even acknowledge, you know, most of that. But as free thinkers, we should embrace all people and understand that people move at their own pace. Now, just because we embrace all people, that does not mean that we embrace and accept all of their ideology and belief and tradition. No, that's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that we need to show some compassion and some understanding for these people out here because some of these people, they just don't know any better. And we need to understand that, okay? So, again, it's not about you and what you want. It's about the people out there that we're trying to reach and that we're trying to, you know, help. The world does not revolve around you. You do not dictate the narrative over here. And there is a method to the madness. So, you have a problem with that, then guess what? It's yours. And I will not allow you to project that onto me, so as long as you understand that. And, you know, what I find interesting is that some of the atheists, non-believers, whatever you're calling yourself, are just as bad as the religious zealots that we talk about, the ones that work earnest. They're just as bad. You can't make someone not believe. It's like they can't make someone believe, period. And so we have to do better at learning how to reach out to people and how to relate to other people. You know, leaving religion and realizing that you were told a lie and that you lived a lie is traumatic. These people have been taught fear and guilt. And it doesn't help when we come in and we turn around and beat them over the head saying that they should have known these things. It doesn't help when we come in and we make them feel inferior, feel less than. You know, no, you don't know everything. You're learning like everyone else, and so are they. So, again, it is not our job to make them feel even worse than how they may already feel, period. So, you know, again, these people have been taught and told a lot. And, I mean, think about it. You know, they were converted, and they converted other people and convinced them into believing the same lie. You know, can you fix that mistake? No. You cannot fix it. All you can do is move on and hope that your newfound truth or revelation can help someone else. We need to really stop being dogmatic about that and allow people to come into their own, you know, because it's unfair. It truly is unfair when you start beating people over the head with a stick because you want them to believe what you believe and you want them to believe that now. And it took time for you to get to this point. So you have to understand that it takes people, other people, time to grow and evolve. You know, you don't dictate that. And that goes out to the other non-believers out there that, you know, that are causing more problems than, you know, bringing forth solutions. And we have to go out there and we have to clean it up. And it's not fair. It's not fair. Anyway, so on the better news here, you know, again, that Jesus exists. And, you know, we've been talking about a few of these things. I see we have some family on the line here. I see Alfred. I see Mario. I see William on the line. You know, see them on the line here. And I'll be pulling them into the conversation shortly. But, okay, again, I posted an article earlier this week talking about the $71 billion in subsidies that religious institutions receive in this country. Why? Why are we, the taxpayers, subsidizing 501c3s, religious institutions? Interestingly enough, Freedom From Religion, they filed a lawsuit against the IRS because of the very blatant newspaper ad by, you know, Franklin and Franklin Graham and his father, Billy Graham. They took out in regards to supporting Mitt Romney. So, you know, the whole thing is interesting. I just want you all to keep that in mind. It's going to tie into something a little bit later. But, you know, again, going back to something that I said earlier, the Jesus that these religious institutions teach never existed. It was the best magic trick ever. He pulled the best disappearing act with no, absolutely no trace of evidence. And so it's interesting because this subject can be highly controversial. But, again, I just want you all to keep in mind that it was the theologians during the European Reformation and the Enlightenment period that brought this to light. It was not freethinkers, it was not atheists that challenged the church in this respect initially. It was theologians who did. So during the European Reformation, basically they started challenging the legitimacy of the church. And during the Enlightenment, they pointed out the errors and the incongruence. So, you know, I just found that quite interesting, and I just want you all to put this in its proper perspective. You know, they kind of started the ball, you know, but we kind of took it and ran with it. And, you know, again, I just want you to know, you know, how this all started with you guys and how this, you know, conversation started. And, again, you know, you all need to understand what happened. And basically when all this went on, this caused all religious authorities, in Scripture itself to be called into question and scrutiny. And, you know, you see that nowadays. You see religious people, especially, you know, from where I came from what I'm used to, the different churches that I've grown up in and was forced to attend, one of the things that they tell us is don't question God. And you're basically taught to turn your brain off, especially if the people in leadership have no answers. And that kind of ties back to that, you know, at one point in time, you were not supposed to question the church. You were not supposed to, you know, cast any doubt, you know, on what they had been told. And what we have to remember is many of these people were illiterate. Then and even now, we have a lot of functional illiterates walking around in this country and especially attending church. So we have to remember that. A lot of these people, they are just taking what they have been told into account and believing it as being true. Why? Because you were told to submit to authority, and you were told to basically listen to the words of, you know, your religious leaders. You know, whatever they said was true, which goes back to that quote from Voltaire that I told you about. You know, basically you were taught that pastors and priests do not lie, which is not the truth. I mean, look at what's been coming out over the past several years regarding what's been happening in the church. And this has been happening for years, but they got into the minds of the people and told them that basically no one would believe it. So, again, you got to understand the psychology behind it. You know, you have, like, the Inquisition, You have the Crusades, you know, the purging of the Cathars, you know, the persecution of Jews throughout history, the falsified, you know, Salem witch hunts, 700-year, you know, year-long war there, you know, the holy wars between the Catholics and the Protestants, and, you know, even the deaths over in Northern Ireland. It's just interesting. You have all of these things. So what they do is they put these ideas in the people's head, and then they push them out there to fight the wars for them. And if you go and you look at what's happening in many of these churches, just think about it, especially those of you that have been churched, if you will. Think about it. When the pastor is angry with someone or has a problem with someone, he'll get behind the pulpit and make a statement. And then many of the people in the congregation, now you all know who he's talking about. And so then that person is shunned and ostracized. And in some cases, you know, manhandled, if you will. It's the same thing. It's just on a smaller scale now. Only deterrent now pretty much is jail. And some people, that doesn't even make a difference. But we have to remember, again, some of these people cannot read. They were functional illiterate then and now. And they trust the people in the leadership because that's what they have been taught to do. They had absolutely no way to reference or research what they had been told, which is why many of them, many religious leaders nowadays, they don't want their people to be on the Internet or to believe anything on the Internet. They don't want them to learn. So it's just interesting, but if people are waking up, just pay attention. You know, controlling a person's mind is easier than being them in submission. And if you want to control a mind, you basically control what people can learn. You control the people. You know, if you control what they learn, you control the people. But if you educate the people, guess what? They ask for rights. And that's not what they want. But anyway, getting back into the subject matter here of, did Jesus exist? Answer is no. He plain and simply did not exist. Not the one that they taught. You know, there were other characters, other people with the name of Yeshua. Because it's not even Jesus, it's Yeshua. And we won't even get into how when the letter J was introduced into the vocabulary. But for the sake of simplicity, we'll call him Jesus because this is not a theology class. But, again, you know, it's a regurgitated religion. Christianity in and of itself is a regurgitated religion. The closest to Jesus is Mithra, but you still have Krishna, you have Zeus, you have, there are Osiris, there are a number of different saviors or gods out there. And the second show that we did, the second installment of this series, we talked about some of these other savior figures out there. And so, again, you know, they're all tied in for a reason. And, you know, I've had a Christian say to me, well, what about Moses? And Moses, you know, prophesied that Jesus would basically, you know, be brought to us. Well, Moses never existed either. The Exodus never happened. That's the next installment of this series. There's no archaeological evidence to support that either. So, you know, it should be interesting as to how all of this, you know, works out. And people are waking up. People are coming into their own. But, again, this definitely needs to be exposed. People need to understand and see what's happening. Because, you know, what you have to understand is that Christianity, when they would go and have these wars and they would take control of a country or a region, all of the ancient spiritual books and texts and records, everything that they had, they were removed and or destroyed. And that information is the ones that weren't destroyed. They're at the Vatican and other places. Some are just lost, so I just can't point the finger directly at the Vatican. But quite a bit of that is at the Vatican in the vacuum-sealed room, way, way, way underground. And so it's just, it's interesting, you know, you need to understand that. But, you know, again, it's important for us to understand what's happening here. I've had Christians that wanted to talk about, again, Flavius, just because you know, or Josephus, or whatever, however you want to pronounce that. And basically, it's been proven that it's a fraud, that the church had control of his writings, and that that information was later inserted, that it was not there originally. And even with some of the interpretations of it or the translations of it, that, you know, it's being called into question, you know. And all that information is out there, and we'll be posting some more of it, and, you know, we'll be talking about it. But, again, Christianity in and of itself, you know, basically, again, is a culmination of a lot of ancient religions, and it was just packaged into a new religion. And Paul himself basically created Christianity because Jesus was not a Christian, even though in his last name was not Christ. And I won't even get into that argument. I've had that argument too many times with people. Christ was not Jesus' last name, even though he never existed. When you go back to the Bible, Christ means the anointed one. That's what that means, according to the Bible. So anyway, let's see here. I got all my guys on the line here. And let's see here. We have, I think, 360. Oh, I think that's Travis.
Yes, it is. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning.
Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you just fine. And we have 804 on the line here as well.
Yes, how y'all doing? This is Deborah.
Good morning, or good afternoon. Good afternoon. And I know we have...
I want to answer one thing real quick.
Certainly.
I am so glad I found y'all. Y'all are so beautiful. I just want you to know that. Okay?
I'm so glad we found Kim, too. Matter of fact, I'm glad that Kim let us find her, you know, made herself available to the ears of the people. Get some more people on the line, Kim. I know that's what you want to do.
I'm no longer alone, okay? I'm no longer alone.
Exactly. You're not alone. You know, there's people out here, and we're trying to get this information out there. But, again, you know, while we're disseminating this information and we're trying to help people and we're trying to inform them, we, as the free thought community, as the non-believing community, we have to do better.
Yeah.
We have to do better. And you have to understand your audience, if you will. And, again, yeah, you know, we have to remember that, especially with the minority free thinkers, many, not all, but many of us are rather new to this. And when I say new, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you would have been, you saw one, and that was Norm Allen. And I am grateful to Norm. I told him that, you know, 5 years ago, you would have been pressed to see more than two or three. But look at where we are now. But in the meantime, we're trying to reach back and educate the people that are still caught up in religion. And, you know, again, I've even had a bishop admit to me that he knows that he has atheists in his congregation.
Yeah.
They know their audience. Why don't we know ours?
It's hard, Kim. I mean, we're just at the beginning of something, right? I mean, when you look at the country, right, they're outnumbered, you know, 9, 10, you know, 100 to 1, 200 to 1.
Right.
300 to 1, 1,000 to 1, you know, 10,000 to 1. You know, any one of those, it's serious. And so it's going to take one particular skill. But one thing I've really been trying to do is to not treat the believers like bad people. Like, I don't hate Christians. I hate Christianity. You know, you know what I'm saying? It's like that. You know,
yeah,
you don't
hate the sin, you hate the sinner.
Right, you got to have complete empathy for anybody who's been tricked, right? Because they were tricked. If you were tricked, it ain't your fault you were tricked, okay?
No.
Because you were tricked.
Exactly. And you were tricked, and you turned around and perpetrated that same trickery, if you will, by convincing other people. And there's really no way to fix that, with the exception of getting out here and putting forth the truth and being human and admitting I was wrong. I mean,
I reserve my anger for those who have been tricked that are trying to trick others. That's where you get my anger, okay, is when you're trying to trick somebody else.
Like preachers.
Right?
Exactly.
Them preachers know. They know.
Mm-hmm.
They know the deal. You know, they know, but they got to make that money. Okay? And preachers do know.
Preachers know.
Exactly.
And that's why they don't mess with they don't mess with people who know they know. Like
exactly.
Ingersoll said, the clergy knows that I know that they know that they do not know.
Right. But,
I like
that. No, but that's the truth. And, you know, but again, that's the reason why we have to bring, you know, all of this up, because, you know, let people know that Christianity in and of itself was invented by Rome. And it was invented to manipulate and control the everyday people, the proletariat, you know, especially the working class, because they need your money to exist. And especially in our communities, you know, the minority communities, well, we all know that the, I hate to put it this way, but this is just how I see it, but the unemployment rates are out of control. Now, that's not, you know, that's true. That's not something, that's not an opinion. You know, this is something that we know to be a truth.
Yeah.
But in our community, many of people in our community aspire to go into ministry. Why? Because it's one of the forms of employment that they can have, in which it does not matter what your background is, because they can use purpose to justify if they're a murderer, if they're a liar, or in some cases, a pedophile. And, yes, and they can earn a very good living. They can earn a very good living, you know, off the backs of the people.
Yeah.
And we need to understand that. And that's one of the reasons why we get some of the resistance and some of the, you know, feedback and some of the anger and vitriol that we get, is because with many of these people, you know, they don't really have too many choices. And that's the reason why I tell people to run background checks on their pastors. Many of them are convicted felons. Many of them have, you know, are pedophiles, all of that. And now I'm not saying that people do not make mistakes. They make mistakes, but, again, you need to understand the people that are before you and why they are before you. And, again, you know, this was created, you know, again, to manipulate and control people. Jesus never existed. Jesus never existed. If you go and you look up, again, Mithra, Krishna, includes the Druid God, you know, look it up. Look up Constantine. Look all of that information up. It is.
And look up King James. King James, boy. Somebody need to. They need to look up King James, because if you don't like gay people, you love King James, don't you? You know, they need to look up, like it says, King James Version. What do they think version means?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
why wouldn't people just ask that question and just say, who is King James? Why does he have a version?
Yes. Yeah. They don't even care about that.
Because he probably had the most money at that time. He had the money to buy the election. And said, you know what, we're going to rewrite this how I like it. I am talking about those how they excuse anybody in the church. Down here in Florida, in the city of Jacksonville, they got a church where they just they banned children because the new preacher is a convicted pedophile. So it's like that. I mean, and I want to say they're punishing the children, but, you know, hey, the kids are out of church. Some odd way that kind of works out for the future.
That's weird.
Right. But the whole thing is just interesting because, again, this is all built on a historical character, Jesus, that never existed. He never existed. And, again, one of the jokes from people that, you know, graduate from seminary is, if you graduated from seminary still believing in God, you weren't paying attention. They didn't know
the truth. That's what I'm talking about.
They know the answers. Exactly. You know, and again, you know, the passages that Flavius, you know, Josephus or Josephus, they've been proven to be forgers. And, you know, even the most conservative scholars will admit that it has been tampered with. And, you know, again, Van Barker wrote a very good book, debunking. What was the name of that book? It was about losing faith in faith. You know, just look Van Barker up. You know, all of his books are actually excellent, excellent books. And,
say the name again.
Van Barker, B-A-R-K-E-R. And he is the co-president of Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Oh. Oh, okay, yeah, okay.
Can we just get to like a basic level when talking about the Bible and say that good things in a book do not mean that it is inspired, but bad things in a book prove that it is not?
Right.
Yeah.
Right? Right? So rules for slavery prove that it ain't worth, I wanted to cuss there, it's worth nothing, you know?
Not even, and like when I can't find it. I know I got it, in, you know, because it was a long time ago when I started all this. But even the part about the gay people in the Bible, they were the people that King James got to do, to translate the Bible. They were pissed off with him, right? And it was something about that they inserted that part about the gay people in there because. See, he was gay. Back then, that was a thing, okay? Back then, it wasn't just him. It was a group of people in that area. I don't forget the name of that area. And they were pissed off with him, and they inserted a lot of things was inserted in the Bible, okay? That doesn't have anything to do with the first Bible that ever came out. You understand what I'm saying?
Right. You're talking about the 1611 Bible. The King James 1611 version. Yeah, and it's interesting, but, you know, regarding people in the Bible. Talk about Baal, B-A-A-L. Basically, what happened was there was male prostitution in the church.
Mm-hmm.
So you could go to church and buy yourself a prostitute for your enjoyment, you know. And, you know, you have to go back and actually read the history about Baal and prostitution in the church and to understand these things and to put it in its proper context. But, you know, they don't teach that part. I mean, to me, it's all a fabrication, each and every last bit of it. It's a fabrication. And, you know, I'm sticking with that particular premise. But if you're going to believe in the Bible and quote it, then you need to put it in its proper context. I mean, if you're going to be wrong, at least be wrong right. You know? And so it's just, and so it's just the whole thing is interesting. But, again, you know, to quote Van Barker, he says, you know, in here, in this article right here, basically this comes from Flavius, you know, and this is a quote directly from Flavius. Now, there was about this time Jesus, a wise man, if it be lawful to call him a man, for he was a doer of wonderful works, a teacher of such men as received the truth with pleasure. He drew over to him both many of the Jews and many of the Gentiles. He was the Christ, and when Pilate, at the suggestion of the principal men amongst us, had condemned him to the cross, those that loved him at the first did not forsake him, for he appeared to them alive again the third day, as the divine prophets had foretold these and 10,000 other wonderful things concerning him and the tribe of Christians, so named for him, are not extinct to this day. Now, what Dan Barker said after that is, if this is the strongest and earliest extra-biblical evidence for the historical Jesus, then the scholarship is on the shakiest ground. That passage from Josephus has been shown conclusively to be a forgery, and even conservative scholars admit that it has been tampered with. But even if it were historical, it dates from more than six decades after the supposed death of Jesus. And then right here it says, the Associated Press chose to omit the fact that scholars have largely discounted the Josephus paragraph as a later interpolation. The passage, although widely quoted by believers today, did not show up in the writings of Josephus until centuries after his death at the beginning of the 4th century. Thoroughly dishonest church historian Eusebius is credited as the real author. The passage is grossly out of context, a clear hint that it was inserted at a later time. So it's important that we know that.
And what do you think is the reason? Why do you think they went through so much trouble to stir up this big lie? I mean, you know, I have to think, well, why would you do that, you know? And I'm thinking that all of this started, I have to say all of this started when they first set foot on the African continent, and they saw what they had, you know, and they had to change all of that. They couldn't start around Egypt and all. They couldn't even get away from that in the Bible. If they could, they would. But they knew that everything, you know, started out of there. They couldn't even get away from that.
No,
that's what I'm saying. If you read the Bible, you'll see little hints, you know.
I kind of think it comes from. Y'all hear me?
Uh-huh.
Okay, cool. I kind of think it comes from, because I'm watching Mankind, the story of all of us, and I think it kind of comes from, you found this thing, this mystical thing that nobody really understands, and you start explaining it to them. Everybody thinks you're the smartest cat on the block. Well, you realize the power in this. You realize the power in being able to control somebody. Not only do you have religion, which everybody is believing in, no one can prove that you're not lying. Hell, you might even believe it yourself, but there's nobody who's willing to challenge to say you're wrong, because now that you have all the powers, you're making the rules. So
yeah.
I think it's a combination of playing on people's beliefs and realizing the power that you have when you use those beliefs to gain power from those people.
Yeah.
Right,
oh, yeah.
You know, and it's just, again, you know, it's important that we kind of bring this into modern day, you know, understanding, so that people will understand and know that basically they're being used. They're being used. It's about money. It's about money and power. And you need to understand how they're using the Bible, using, you know, the gospel, using, you know, our innate need to believe in something other than ourselves. You know, they're using
right.
it to manipulate and to control us. Because, you know, in and of itself, here we go, another dollar and pity there. Basically, it starts and ends with us. It starts
right.
and ends with us. You don't have to believe in a deity. You don't have to believe necessarily in other people, if you will. Now, we need other people to survive.
Yeah.
We do. You're not a physician. I mean, even if you are a physician, you can't operate on yourself. So you have to trust and believe in someone else, you know, in that regard. But, again, you know, the Christianity that's, you know, basically enforced today, you know, is built upon a non-existent character. And we need to make sure that people understand that, you know, the Bible itself, you know, is a tool. It's a subliminal tool, but it's a very powerful tool. And it's stolen material, stolen stories, it's full of allegories that can be interpreted 15 different ways for one particular story. It's about, you know, it's about the occult. Just call it for what it is. And
right.
people need to understand what that's about. It's about control of your mind. It's about control of you. And, you know, again, you know, as I stated earlier, you know, it's easier to control a person's mind than to beat them into submission.
Right.
And, you know, again, when you have people, you know, they have something to lose. You know, again, they need the money. They need to control the people. They don't have enough police officers to control the people that they have now. Imagine if people were to actually stand up for their rights. And that goes back to that quote that I gave you earlier today, where I said, you know, basically, control what people can learn. You can control the people. Educate them, and they ask for rights. And that's what we're seeing now, just, you know, in society itself. I think we have Nakomi and Raina on the line with us here. Are you there?
Hello.
Call me ring.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey, I don't know if you guys can hear me.
Hello, how y'all doing?
I'm okay.
Hi. Great.
So I mean, I just think that it's, you know, important for people to understand. And again, you know, if you want to do some more research, you want to look into the early Christian writer named Origen, O-R-G-E-N. And with that Christian writer, Origen, basically, he stated that Josephus or Flavius did not recognize Jesus as the Messiah, in direct contradiction to the passage that I read you earlier, where he said, you know, he was the Messiah. No. You know, it was written in Latin, but, you know, originally it was said he was believed to be the Christ, but it was changed to say he was the Messiah. So just go back and read and research and then understand why this information was inserted in there. And we got to remember that Flavius, Josephus, or Josephus, he was a Pharisee. Why would he acknowledge Jesus as the Christ when he was a Pharisee?
You know,
the very same people that... Go ahead.
You know, I find it hilarious. It's something I even debated about with a few of my Christian fans. Like, don't you find it kind of funny that he rolled around with 12 other dudes? They didn't write anything down. He didn't write anything himself down.
Yeah.
The Jewish leaders didn't write anything down. Pontius Pilate didn't write it down. So, you know, I'm like, if this is the most important thing in the history of mankind, that God gave birth to himself to lead mankind back to him, you know what I'm saying? This is the son of the creator of the world. No one thought that maybe, just maybe, we should write this shit down. And,
Hey, Matthew, don't write that down. Hey, Luke, put that in your book, dog.
But see, a lot of it, Constantine kept a lot of that stuff out of the Bible. You know, also, some of them wrote, but a lot of stuff, that's where you find out a lot of stuff. Because, see, a lot of stuff he didn't want. Just like Lilius. I mean, what is it, Lilius? Lilius? That part of Genesis is not even in there, you know? But it was written down.
That's really kind of like Jewish kind of folk tale, but that's a different story. I mean, there are a lot of Jewish folk stories that are not included in Genesis. I mean, that's why they have the Tanakh.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So they have the Tanakh and the Torah, but that's a different conversation.
Okay.
Sometimes people will say stuff like, there's stories left out of the Bible, stuff has been changed. And I'm like, it starts off with a talking snake and ends up with a place that most people who think are going to go that's bad. What else do I need to know? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, how could there be anything that I need in there? I mean, you got, you know, does Jesus exist? No.
Well, I
think it's a good time.
It's like the whole thing is unbelievable. Like, even if you were to believe that Jesus were a historic person, that wouldn't prove that Jesus was the Messiah. It wouldn't prove that he had divine powers. It wouldn't prove that he was God. So it doesn't make a difference whether or not Jesus was an actual, you know, person or not, you know? But to a certain degree, one almost has to think, like, maybe there was some kind of person who represented themselves as a prophet, just because of the length to which people went to try to make the prophecies of the Old Testament fit this person. You know what I mean? So it just makes you kind of think, like, well, there might have been somebody, but even if there was somebody, it wasn't what they said they were. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Wouldn't there be, like, a bunch of people before that person and even after that person? You include, like, a David Koresh or a Charles Manson who thought they were the second coming. You know what I mean? And
well, there were. There were lots of messiahs during that time. There were lots of different prophets. There were lots of different people who
it depends on who catches on, right?
The same sort
That's
of
right.
way
right.
as Jesus, but they were, you know, they were, some of them were forgotten, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. Nakomi, did you have something to say?
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. No, what I find interesting is how conflicting the Gospels are, how the stories and the timelines of even Jesus' birth do not match
right.
one another. When I found that out, I mean, that was kind of
right, like,
eye-telling.
The census of Quirinius, mm-hmm. right? Like, it says that Jesus had to, at first it says that they had to go back to the place where Joseph was born. But that's bullshit. Like, there's no census in the world, at any point in time in the world history, that where you had to go back to where you were born to
right.
take a census. The census is about taxation. Why would I want you to leave where I can tax you, where I can get revenue from you, to go back to the place where you were born
right.
so they can tax you? Doesn't make any sense.
Very valid point, Rena.
Right.
Very good point, Rena. You could call that the salmon effect. The salmon swim upstream to where they were spawned.
Right. Right. I mean, it just makes no sense. And then even the timing, like, there was no census taken during the time that it's claimed that Jesus was born. It was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right, right. And it's just, it's interesting. You know, when you put it all into its proper perspective and see how, you know, it's been manipulated. And I'm talking about religion in general, but then also I'm also talking about the people that, you know, that adhere to religion, how they've been manipulated. And, you know, it's again, you know, a book called The Jesus Mysteries by Timothy Frakes or Frecky and Peter Gandy. Basically, they explain how the myth and legend of Jesus could have easily arisen without a historical founder. The Jesus story was pressed from the same template as other mythical savior gods who were killed and resurrected, such as, you know, Osiris and Mithra and Attis and, you know, Dionysius. And, you know, so that's why, you know, that's why we tell people, do your research. Do your research. I mean, if you even go and read about early Christianity, they did not believe that Jesus was this divine being. It has changed. It has evolved. It has been manipulated. And it's going to do it again. You know, they're still, you know, manipulating and, you know, changing. You know, you've seen all these people.
Well, they have to. If they don't, then they'll definitely, you know, pass into history. You know what I mean? They'll definitely be regarded the way that we regard, you know, Greek mythology. I mean, that was a religion. Like, people up until like 1920, still some of them believed that there were gods living on Mount Olympus. That was until someone climbed Mount Olympus and was like, okay, there's nobody up here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Nobody told.
I find it, you know, really funny, though, you know, and I find myself saying it a lot because a lot of it really is quite funny. Everything, I look at the different depictions of Jesus and everything, and I'm like, I see everybody sharing these pictures, and 9 out of 10, it looked like the dude who was the lead singer of Nickelback to me. And I see that picture, I see black Jesus, you know, saying some with short hair, some
yeah.
with Rastafarian locks and whatnot,
right.
and everything.
Right.
I even see the one with this really actually Cesare Borgia, but they don't know that. And just looking at how they eat it up and everything, and that's like, you know, it's like really, really a hilarious event because it's like you don't even have any real proof that this guy existed, especially since you got so many descriptions of what this guy looks like. It's like you, one guy committed a crime. You got 20 people who are drawing everything from clowns to midgets, and nobody knows what the guy actually looked like. You know,
right.
what I mean?
When Constantine did the statue, he used his own face.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting, but yes, of course, people are going to, you know, whatever the savior or whoever they deem as the savior, they're going to see it. Or see that person or understand that scripture or that holy word or whatever, they're going to see it in a way that benefits them. They're going to see it in a way in which they can relate to it. So that accounts for, like, some of, the, you know, him having dreads or having a big old afro or long. Exactly.
There's even Asian.
I mean, I was going to say there's actually a place in Japan that claims that Jesus died there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Well, isn't that the Mormon template? You say that God is from here, Missouri, right? Isn't that what you do?
It's not that God was born there. It's that the Garden of Eden was there, and then also the return of Jesus is supposed to occur there.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, it's just, like I said, the whole thing is interesting because, I mean, again, and I know we have some Christians that are listening, and, again, we welcome you to call in. Our telephone is 310-982-4273, 310-982-4273. But, again, like I said, I know many of them are going to definitely zoom in on Josephus or Flavius here. And what they need to understand is we've been reading this stuff, been researching this, and one of the ironic aspects to this whole situation with Josephus there is he describes two different Jesuses.
That's right.
Okay? And the two different Jesuses that he describes and names, they're blended into the figure of the gospel Jesus that you all believe in.
That's
so
right.
He had, you know, the first Jesus who predicts woe to Jerusalem, and that person is flawed until his bones were shown, but never cried out, and made no reply when he was challenged. And then he didn't thank people for their kindness, you know, none of that. And he was finally killed by stoning. So he was stoned to death. And then you have the Jesus of Galilee. This is the second Jesus that he describes. And basically, this Jesus was associated with Simon and John and had a following of sailors and poor people. And it talks about how Judas betrayed him and how he was captured, you know. And you just have to read and research.
It was another Jesus of Paul. Remember?
Are you talking about Paul? Paul of Tarsus?
Yeah. Remember when he started, you know, after he said he saw all that on the road, and then he started going around preaching? It was another
Jesus.
Yeah,
you're talking about Paul of Tarsus and his experience on the Damascus Road.
Yeah, it was another Jesus, too.
Go ahead.
I forgot the name. It's in the Bible, though. But
no, it's okay. You know, you had Paul, you had Timothy, and, you know, Paul wrote some letters to Timothy, 1st and 2nd Timothy there. But, no, Paul of Tarsus, when he had his Damascus Road experience, basically, that pretty much was when Christianity, in that respect, was developed. And Paul, if you're going to, like I said, you know, I don't believe any of these people ever existed, but if you're going to read it and believe it in context, Paul was Gnostic, G-N-O-S-T-I-C,
right.
Okay? And Paul was a showman. Paul was like Creflo Dollar, Eddie Long. He was a mega pastor, even though he was going from place to place, but he was a superstar.
Yeah.
And he manipulated Christianity into being what he wanted and needed it to be. And people are following that. If you pay attention to many Christians, they follow the gospel of Paul. They're not necessarily following the gospel of Jesus. So, you know, it's interesting.
That's right.
Exactly.
Paul is.
That's really deep.
Yeah.
So, you know, one thing I see is, you know, your title was, Does He Exist? And then in my mind, some of the things we talked about was about how, one thing you said earlier about how certain churches don't want their congregation members on the Internet. that more and more is going to get squashed because more and more things are only found on the internet. And so people are not going to be able to avoid the internet. And so maybe we need to get ready for a like a big flow of people who ain't believing that shit. Okay? And so, Kim, you've been right the whole time because what's going to happen is, here we are, and here are the people, the next group of people, and then there's going to be like a flood of non-believers all of a sudden coming up soon. And we already kind of know that when you first kind of unchurch yourself, when you start thinking things like, well, I spent all that time doing that.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
And that's the reason why.
And people can stay there for like 10 years.
Exactly.
You can stay there popping around trying to figure out, well, maybe one of these other religions is, maybe the dude in the hat got it right.
but the thing is that, I've been saying that for a while, that we need to be prepared for an influx of people. And it's getting ready to, it's happening now.
It's happening right now.
If you look at the numbers, exactly. Look at the numbers of people that are, deconverting or walking away from religion or no longer see themselves as religious, see themselves as spiritual. The numbers are growing. And this is why it's important for us to have shows like this so that we can, inform people and educate people. They are waking up. Some people do not know this information. It's important that we have it out there.
It's just safer for people who were already awake to be loud and awake. You know what I mean? Like, there's always been gay people. It just wasn't cool to be loud and gay. And now, lately, it's been cool to be loud and gay. So it hasn't been cool to be loud and atheist. And pretty soon, even in America, it'll be regular to be loud and atheist or agnostic or unconvinced or whatever other secular or whatever they call it.
And that really scares the scare man. That really scares him to death.
Because look, the church. I hear Saul said this. He said the church knows that it can't make everyone believe. So the church attempts to make everyone say they believe, and that time is over.
Right. Go ahead, Mario. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I really marvel at the idea that you have this guy now. Let's say I'm an indigenous, tribesman in South America, and somebody somehow, we'll worry about the particulars of that later. Somebody tells me that whatever I just did wrong was cool, because this dude 5-6,000 miles away from me, in another country I've never even heard of, sacrificed himself on behalf of whatever bad things I did. And I just really marvel at the audacity to tell somebody that some other god that they don't even know about took the fall for them and expect them to be like, okay, cool, well, yeah, I agree with you, The whole concept of the Savior itself is ridiculous, because I don't understand how somebody who got himself killed is supposed to save you.
It's the whole thing, and because it's growing, the secular community, and it's hard for people to give up what they've been taught, because no one wants to feel as though they've been hoodwinked or bamboozled or lied to. And that, Mama and Big Mama and all of them lied to me. Who wants to feel that way? Who wants to be angry with their parents or their grandparents? People that they love and admired, people that they had hoped to see in the afterlife. They would once again have a chance to celebrate and hug and kiss and love that person. Maybe that was the only person that they felt that ever loved them genuinely.
I understand how they got, you have to understand how they got that way. Miseducated, forced into it, you're going to get killed if you're not. They were scared into a lot of things.
That's true. And, one thing that I've said is, in particular, with you know, with some of the minority communities, in particular the black community in this country, I've always wondered if the fear was passed down generationally.
Yes,
and what I mean by that is, what I mean by
it
that
has
is,
been. For sure.
Exactly.
Kim?
It's just on a more subconscious level now.
It was in the gene. It was in that gene, man. I mean, that's in your gene, you know?
Well, that's actually a good way to, if you want to control people, you know, scaring them into believing something is not, you know, a bad idea or a starting point, you know?
Exactly.
It is.
Exactly.
It's a great starting point, and it's regular. Look, Ingersoll said, to attack the king, the priest was blasphemy. For centuries, the sword and cross were allies. Together, they attacked the race of men. They defended each other. The throne and the altar were twins, two vultures from the same egg. Robert Greene Ingersoll.
Exactly. And that's the thing. It was all created to control people. It was all created to control people, to control their money. If you notice, many of the people that are deeply entrenched in religion, at least this has been my experience, you know, from the churches that I've visited and have partaken of over the years, and this includes mega churches, the majority of the people are living at or below the poverty line. And I once told some religious people, when 80% or more of the congregation has at least $1 million in liquid assets, not hard assets, but liquid assets, then I would shut up. And that has never happened because all of the wealth and power goes to the pastor and his cronies. We have a caller on the line, area code 803. May we ask who's calling?
Peace, what's up? My name is Victor, calling out of Columbia, South Carolina.
Hello.
Hello, how y'all doing?
Right.
How you
doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Hey, I just wanted to kind of touch on some of the things that y'all were talking about as far as, you know, is Jesus being real or the Jesus that actually exists. I'm kind of tuning in late, so I might have, you know, I might be repeating some things that's already been said. But, you know, obviously Jesus Christ, as they depicted in the Bible, is not real. Actually, no character in the Bible is actually real. These are concepts talking about spiritual principles and things that most of the common people did not understand. So when they tried to explain these things, they understood the psychology of the brain and how the brain works, dealing with understanding symbols and images, and to convey certain, you know, principles and understandings. So I think over time, things have got perverted and changed up. But even if you go back thousands of years ago, dealing with our ancestors and the way they dealt with society, It was always a holistic point of view. So you didn't take spirituality out of government. You didn't take it out of education. It was all a unison. I think that once it got Europeanized and whitewashed, things have become very, you know, separated, and things have become misunderstood. So I think that we can, when we say God and we say Jesus and we say these different titles of that nature, we're not talking about nothing literally. It's nothing literal. And I think that's where we fall victim at.
All right. And you're right. None of those people ever existed. And you're right. You know, because we always talk about the psychology behind, you know, the Bible and the manipulation of the people. And you're spot on right there. You're spot on. And, yeah, it's about controlling people and understanding, which is why, you know, many of these people in leadership, why they have these retreats and they teach each other how to manipulate people, how to control people, how to, you know, justify keeping people in perpetual poverty, you know, by telling them that they have to pay tithes and offerings. And, you know, one thing that a lot of people didn't realize, especially people that are unchurched, people, like you see all those people in the choir stand and you see the ushers running around and all the people on, you know, different types of committees, they pay.
Yeah.
You pay to be in the choir. Yeah. You have a monthly due as a choir member. You have a monthly due as you know, to be an usher. Now, you're volunteering your time, and you're paying a monthly fee.
That's
you're
right.
paying to be used. It's just the whole thing is interesting. The concept.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, I mean, religion, modern day religion is business. I mean, first and foremost, it's big business. But at the same time, it offers the individual, it's like an insurance policy, to where you say at the end of my life, whenever that may be, I'm gonna get a reward, or I'm gonna get a some type of favor for believing this way, because you don't really understand how life works. You can't say, well, if I behave good, quote unquote, whatever's good to you, because good and bad is relative. But if I behave in this manner, then I'm gonna get some type of reward. And I think you have individuals who don't know or don't understand that, and they just subscribe to these different ideologies, saying that, you know what, I got me a State Farm insurance policy saying that I'm guaranteed to go in after I die. But then you have these individuals.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Diego. No.
Yeah. Then you have an individual, like you know, I would say a real free thinker who says, you know what, I don't care about no reward or no insurance policy. I want the truth, and you know, whatever it takes for me to understand the truth, I'm willing to do it. And that's the line that's being drawn in the sand, is that, like you said earlier, it's a fear mechanism. This fear, this economy is a fear-driven economy. So the more fear you have, then the more insurance you're going to buy, the more alarms you're going to get, the more different things you're going to get to protect yourself, because the fear is running rampant throughout the cycle. And
the zombies are coming. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, and to a certain degree, they're being taught that if they pay their tithes and offerings and submit themselves to authority, submit themselves to their religious groups, you know, religious leaders, that they will have a place in heaven. So in essence, they're trying to buy a ticket, buy a place in heaven, which the Catholic Church used to call indulgences. So guys, look that up, Catholic Church indulgences. And that's what's happening, and it's still happening now. They just, you know, do it under a different premise. But, you know,
Leopold's control. Leopold really did control them, you know, I mean, That was their agenda completely over in Africa. Leopold was a trip, too. King Leopold.
So, yeah, you know, again, you know, it's just interesting. You got to look this stuff up and understand it. You know, and I'm gonna give a brief word, here we go, about tithing. And so that, again, I say, if you're going to believe it, I don't believe in any of this stuff, but if you're going to believe it in context.
You should not
be tithing. For the believers out there that are listening to this and that are still part of the church, you're conflicted or what have you, do not allow them to trick you into tithing. Because, again, tithing itself was for the Israelites. Okay?
Right.
And tithing was never money. It was never money. It was agriculture.
Right.
It was, you know, fruits, vegetables, building materials, all of that. That's
building
what that was
people
for.
Up. That's right.
Right.
Helping,
but
helping
even modern-day Jews are Israelites. They do not tithe. Why? Because there are no Levitical priests. And the Levitical priests were put in order to receive the tithe. And until a perfect red heifer is born, and they can rebuild the temple in which they can make the sacrifices, there are no Levitical priests on this earth to collect the tithe. The rabbis, you know, in the Jewish community, to this day, they still don't get paid money. They get paid these vouchers, and they go to stores in their own community, and they give them these vouchers, and this is how they're able to live, because they were not able to hold regular day jobs. So it's just interesting. You know, I mean, I can go on more in depth about it because I've been well-versed on this. I've been researching this for a while. You know, I don't believe in any of it, but if you're going to be there, understand what you're reading. Get a better understanding.
I don't even think that most of the Christians believe that. I think the Christians are more atheists than anybody, to tell you the truth, deep down inside of them, because they don't really do in practice what they even talking about. You know what I'm saying? You can't believe something that you don't understand. So you gotta look at it like you gotta go back to slavery for a second. And during slavery, it was basically we was being bred like dogs and animals to think and behave a certain way. so right. so we and we still see the ramifications of that today. Is that right. we've been taught to think a certain way. You don't really have free will. They didn't. You most of the people didn't say, well, okay. You know, this is what you have a choice in. You either have Judaism, Christianity, or Islam. You know what I'm saying? You don't say, well, you know, there's a whole mantra of different schools of thoughts out there. But the main three is pretty much what you're choosing from. And then from that standpoint, most of the people that say they believe that didn't even choose that. That was something that their mother, their grandmother, their great-grandmother was a part of, and they just, you know, they just grew up in that way of life. There's not too many black people that can say they don't have the picture of the white Jesus in their head. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You can see this, like, the psychology of that.
No, but I'm saying that ties into what I said earlier about how the fear has been passed down generational. And,
right.
and
I mean,
you
I mean,
really want to read, if you really want to read and learn more about that, you need to pick up Sickie Boo Hutchison's book. Moral Combat. Read that book. I mean, the first two chapters alone will blow your mind.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I have to ask the question that, you know, of them. You know, first of all, if you believe that God is able to predict the future, then technically this entire experiment in human living was a pointless endeavor from the outset. But anyway, let's assume this. Let's assume he did send Jesus down. Jesus is supposed to be either him or his son, you know, and he's supposed to lead the people back to God. He died before he accomplished that task. Why didn't he, if Jesus was so important and he existed, why didn't he stay? You're the immortal son of a God. You not only can take on Satan head on and cast demons into pigs, for what reason, I don't know. But you can also raise the dead and heal people. If you'd have stayed on this planet, you would have accomplished that task more. My atheism wouldn't exist if you stayed on this planet and lead these people back to where you wanted to go. Even though it was a stupid thing in the first place, because it was your father's invention or yourself, and since he knows the future, he would already know that this shit ain't going to work. We're not even going to ignore it. We're going to ignore that. If Jesus existed,
and
why didn't he stay?
Well, how can the best plan a guy could come up with is to legitimately rape a woman and stick himself in her belly? That's nuts.
Because that's what I'm saying, man.
Those stories are talking about something totally different, man. I mean, we can go back and forth all day long about how erroneous and crazy these stories are, but they're not talking about that. These individuals that wrote this stuff was very intelligent. It wasn't nothing about that, man. I mean, and that's the problem, man. Like, we're talking about something totally, totally different, man. And the stuff that's in there, I mean, there are certain truths that's in there. You can't get away from that. But at the end of the day, most people don't make decisions based on intelligence. We make decisions based upon what feels good.
When you said there's some truth in there, think about it. If you got a recipe book, and some of the recipes are good for you, and a bunch of them kill you, that's a bad book, right?
I mean, it depends on what you're trying to cook. You know what I'm saying? If you're trying to cook it to kill somebody, and then it's not a bad book. It's what you need. So it just depends on how it's relative to you. And that's what I'm saying, man. It's just the point of you understanding the history of the Bible, the history of just spiritual texts or literary texts in general. And it all stems from, you know, us. These stories is repetitive, man, throughout all cultures. Every culture has some type of savior or some type of, you know, phenomenal events that didn't happen that's the cause of their transgressions. I mean, it's just a part of each culture's history. But like I said, you don't really understand the stuff, so we take it and say, you know what, this couldn't have happened. Of course it didn't happen. It'd be stupid to think that it did happen. But like I said, we don't make decisions based upon intelligent facts. We make decisions based upon feelings, and we always will. Like, we just a person of feelings, and once our feelings are attached to certain imagery, certain stories, and certain things like of that nature, that's how we make our decisions. And how we make our decisions is how...
Okay, but just because you find certain motifs throughout different cultures doesn't mean that those things that they're talking about actually happen or have any relevance. Just like what Travis was saying, the fact that it has a few truths in it doesn't make it legitimate. I mean, a broken clock is right twice a day. Okay? It doesn't make a difference.
Every book in this world is the work of man. Every religion was written by men. Men
exactly.
existed before books. And if books had existed before man, then some of us might believe there could be a thing that could be a holy book. But it can't be, because men wrote it all.
Exactly. We have a couple of callers on the line. Let's pull them in.
Wouldn't make it whole.
Eric, 323, may we ask who's calling?
Yeah, okay, this is Steve.
Hello, 323?
This is Steve. Can you hear me?
Yep.
We can barely hear you, Steve.
Okay. Well, my position is that, you know, just going back to Jesus. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay, just going back to the whole Jesus concept, I think that, you know, you take a person who obviously, you know, sacrifices, you know, for our sins, as it has been explained, but the fact is that these are rules that were made up by this person who sacrificed himself on the cross, and then if you accept those rules, or exercise your free will. You exercise your free will, then you're going to be, you know, tossed in a lake of fire for eternity. Or if you accept the fact that this has actually happened, then you're going to be, you can be awarded, you know, eternal life to, as a servant or a slave or a servant, to worship at his feet for eternity. I just find that kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Ain't one way or the other.
Yeah.
It does have to do with whether or not you accept the rules, but even if you're never introduced to the rules say that you're already worthy of death when you're born.
Yeah.
That's what the rules say.
Mm-hmm.
Just
yeah.
by virtue of being born, not for anything that you did.
But I find interesting,
exactly.
what I find most, what I find most interesting about that, if you actually make it and you accept that, you get to worship at his feet for eternity as a servant. I mean, I don't see that as some way I'd like to spend my eternity.
Right.
Exactly. We have, that's interesting right there. 937, you're on the line. May we ask who's calling? 937?
Yeah, my name is Chris.
Hi, Chris.
No, I said Quest.
Sure.
Like Q-U-E-S-T.
Quest.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Okay, what you got for us?
Well, my question is about, I know it's one of the bullet points on the blog talk is that it asks why there are no historical record, no reliable historical record for Jesus. Would you guys say that that's the consensus of the scholarly community? Like historians, that's pretty much a settled premise?
What historian? If you're talking about, go ahead.
There are secular Jews that will tell you that there was no Moses. So what's your question?
Exactly.
I don't know what you mean.
No, but I'm not asking about Moses. I'm asking about Jesus and what was on the blog site. It was saying that
right.
there aren't any. So I'm asking if that's the
right.
consensus of historians.
Right, so yeah, there were no legitimate historical accounts of Jesus. So
right, I'm asking
no,
exactly the consensus of historians.
I'm sorry,
yes, that historians have some type of filter, a thing they have, like scientists, where they have a community that checks with each other. Is that what you're?
Right.
That's what your question assumes, right?
Right. Right, but
okay,
I mean, there's
so,
such a thing as a scholarly community of historians. What I'm saying is that their conclusion?
Yes.
And so,
yes.
So in order for anybody to answer yes to that, there has to be a scholarly community of historians.
Right.
Right.
There are,
so, is there a scholarly group of historians that checks their stuff together? Because
right.
if there isn't, there's no way to answer his question.
Right, but there
yeah,
is.
Yeah, do we really need
okay,
them?
But
other people
have already answered yes, so that assumes that there are.
I was just going to tell you that there is a general consensus, but it's that he probably did exist. But that's a probable like situation. Like they think.
Well, okay, it's probable, but then what do you do with the claim on the site?
The influence, Yes, but again, you have to look at what those conclusions are based upon. Now, you have a historical community, particularly in the West, that is based in what? Christianity. From then comes, you know, the consensus that it probably did happen because most of these people are Christians or given towards, you know, Western culture, which is based off of Christianity. So you still have to look at what the evidence says. It's not necessarily just based on what the consensus is. The consensus could be that the sky is purple. You know what I mean? That doesn't.
Well, those are obviously apples and oranges, though. I mean, historians are basing their conclusions on evidence, and that's kind of something in
not
professional academia.
Not necessarily. There's a difference in what is considered evidence in a historical context versus what's considered evidence in other contexts, such as archaeology.
Right, but this is a historical question.
Again,
let me say this right here. If it's a historical question, then that's the case. Then the Hebrew language doesn't have a J in it. So that tells you right there that Jesus didn't exist in that capacity because the Hebrew language doesn't even have the J sound. So,
that's kind of neither here nor there. That's a question of language and the spelling of a name, not a historical figure.
Isn't the name historical?
You're talking about a matter of translation from the Greek rendering of his name.
His name could have been,
let's say it was Ball.
Let me clarify my question.
The question that you have posed is basically you were asking about the historicity there,
I'm asking about the consensus of the scholarly community. It says here, why are there no legitimate historical accounts of Jesus? So the question assumes that there are no legitimate historical accounts of Jesus.
Well, there aren't.
And I'm asking, is that the consensus of the historical community? Is that what most historians would say?
Well, I can't speak for
that. Would be the consensus of everyone who looks.
Right, well,
what I'm saying is
you guys have made this claim that there are no legitimate historical accounts of Jesus, but then you say, well, there aren't any people in the expert position of knowing, or at least I don't know any of them. So how can you make that claim if you don't know what experts would actually have to say on the subject?
Okay,
how about this?
Do you know who wrote the Bible? No. Do you know anyone who wrote the Bible? Who knows anyone who wrote the Bible? No. Do you know anyone who knew anyone who ever heard of anyone who knew anyone? No. Okay?
The anonymity of authorship doesn't mean that something written in the text isn't actually the case, though.
The Romans go from all of that to the rules.
The Romans were very popular for keeping accurate records. The Romans have no actual record of a Jesus actually ever existing, and never in the history of Romans that any time they have an execution where the crowd decided as who would be executed, and that's never happened in their history. So why would it change up at that particular point in time?
All right.
Okay.
We thank him for calling in, and if you have any information that we're apparently missing, you know, per your beliefs, there, feel free to post it on my wall.
Feel free to post it in the room.
I didn't even get what he was trying to say because, you know,
well,
I mean, it seemed like he was more in trying to instruct us on what not to ask or what not to say. And look, I just want to know, did he believe that Jesus existed?
Oh.
No, but here's the difficulty with this particular issue. It's just like in science, it's not just what consensus says. It's what the evidence also tells you.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So there happens to be a number of, let's just face it, anyone who's studying religious history, anyone studying Christian history, anyone focused in those areas, is generally going to have a vested interest, meaning that they're going to be a religious person themselves. That's not to say that what their views are invalid on everything. It just means that they may have a bias. And the bias in this field has been towards a historical Jesus being real. The evidence does not necessarily conclude that. It does not lead to that conclusion. But a lot of people still hold the view that because Christianity was so influential in the period after his supposed death, that it, therefore Jesus must have existed.
Yeah.
And some people still carry that on despite the fact that there's more evidence that King Arthur existed than there is for historical
people. I mean, I would like to meet Merlin myself, but that's another story. But, you're right. Exactly. And that's why, you know, we were trying to get him to kind of expound a little bit on where he was going with that. But, you know, again, we thank him for calling in and all of that. But, you know, again, if he is speaking to the antithesis of that, you know, we welcome him to send his information in. You know, I'm always open to reading what you need.
He's on the quest.
Yeah,
well, what
he
was doing was, it's how, like libertarians will argue, Republicans, conservatives, and some of these people, they argue very similarly, okay? And what they try to do is they try to pin you on an absolute, okay?
Right.
And so he said pin us all on some kind of absolute in his first question, and I was like, well, and that's why I said what I said. The way he asked the question, you can't even answer that shit.
That's right.
Because then you would have been speaking for all historians and all, and that's not what we're trying to do. The way Raina broke it down, I think was, I wish she would just repeat that because it was so crispy. I want it in my head so that I can see it. How she said that, and I mean this. I mean, the way she said that, let me see if I can try to do it. She said, the people who would research whether or not Jesus existed had a lot of times a financial or even spiritual reason for finding that evidence, right? So they're finding what they were looking for, right? And even though they say they found it, the evidence doesn't show that. Is that pretty good, Irina?
I've heard people.
I've talked
to people that claim.
I know that wasn't that good, but I was trying.
But they don't really research.
I know there's one thing I always want to hear Raina say.
I
always want to hear Raina respond to somebody with just, actually, I am a scientist, so maybe you should just listen to me.
I'm not that kind of a person, so you're probably not going to hear that come out of my mouth unless somebody is like, well, what do you know? Well, actually, But in any case, when it comes to like things like this, like I try not to speak out of my depth. I'm not saying that I have conclusive evidence that shows that Jesus doesn't exist. I'm just saying that there's nothing conclusive to show that he exists. In my opinion, after reading all of the documentation that people say proves he exists, it's based on texts that have either been altered or forged, or documents that weren't written until decades, you know, even hundreds of years after Jesus supposedly died. So why should I believe that? You didn't know Jesus.
Right.
You never walked. You weren't at his execution. There was no one else found it relevant to write about this person. No one else.
Right.
And there were lots of very, very prolific historians who wrote about things that were going on in that part of the world at that time.
If anything, Pontius Pilate should have wrote something down. I mean,
I think he was the one that directed Paul, really. I think Paul and him was in cahoots.
Who?
I don't think it happened.
You know, I mean, if you read it, I think he had, you know, if you read it, like, I think they would have been in cahoots with each other. I just think that, if it happened.
Right. The whole thing is, like I said, it's interesting because the young man referred to Moses, and I posted an article from, I believe it was L.A. Times, on several different occasions in which, you know, Christian as well as Jewish scholars have all concluded that the Exodus never happened. I think I spoke about that earlier in the show today. It never happened. There was no archaeological proof, you know, for any of that. And I mean, even with, you know, Jesus and Paul and all of these different people, and, you know, just to answer the questions very simply, they never existed. None of these people ever existed.
Which one was
and
that?
Again, go ahead.
Oh, which one was that that said, "Let my people go"?
That was Moses.
Okay. You know what's so strange about that story? That's so weird. It's a little weird. That's what gets me. All right, Jesus is going to go behind Moses' back and going hard in the heart of the Pharaoh. And then, why would you do that? I mean, you know, you guys, why would you make him say no? And then you're going to kill all the kids? Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was pretty jacked up. I even
you know,
found it kind
on
of.
Now. That don't make any sense. You know what I would have did?
What?
I would have, like, killed all the kids, right? And 2 days later, I would wake them all up. That would be a miracle.
But to
kill somebody? No, that don't make no sense.
Well, I mean, right. I mean, like I said before, man, it's not talking about nothing literal. So if you look at the way they express certain classes back in those times, you would take the S-U-N, sun, and the way they revered the sun and the way they related to nature, and they would try to express that to people who wasn't on that certain level. So when you have Jesus on a certain level, it's a personification of the sun. That's where you would have the actual Jesus walking on water. You look at the sun when it rises on the waterfront, it looks like the sun is walking on water. And you have winter solstice when the sun descends 33 degrees below the equator and rises back up around December 22nd, 3 days later, December 25th. So they were talking about, on one level, they were talking about the S-U-N sun. So when you have a European come in and excavate and change up the meanings or don't understand the full meanings of it, then they start taking these different concepts and making them literal. So now you have a whole misunderstanding being perpetuated throughout a whole entire group of people who can't read nor write, and the only thing they can have is word of mouth stories, or they have certain imagery to kind of go along with their actual agenda.
And that's why you have that's why you have the word amen at the end of a prayer. Amen.
Right.
That's Amen Hotep, who started the one God thing.
All right, but, you know, it's interesting, you know, when you put all of that in perspective, just in general, how, again, you know, just bringing it back to today, how a non-existent character was used to control and manipulate, you know, millions and billions of people. So let's bring it back into context here. And basically, it all boils down to the fact that Jesus never existed, and people have been manipulated and conned into believing this. And again, you know, as we talked about earlier, there's a lot of psychology behind it. A lot of psychology and religion and how it's set up. Do I believe that our religious leaders, if you will, actually believe in the Bible? No.
No.
Because if they did believe in it, they would not do some of the things that they've been doing, some of the egregious acts, just outright blatant hypocrisy. They don't believe it. And the young man said earlier that he believes that, you know, Christians are bigger atheists than atheists. You know, exactly. That was one of the issues that I always had with believers when I was once a believer. It was basically they weren't living according to what they were teaching and preaching.
Exactly.
They weren't living according to the Bible. And basically after watching that and actually reading the Bible and doing some research, that is what pretty much factored me right out of that Christian equation.
Exactly.
And it's just interesting. But again, you know, the Bible, you know, someone says the Bible is a gold mine. Yes, it is. It is.
You know,
You tell people when to wake up, when to go to sleep, how to act, all of that. And there are some people out there just that, you know, how can I, susceptible. That's the best word that I can use.
Addicted.
Just that susceptible that they fall for the okey-doke, if you will, that they believe what these pastors are telling them. And then when you see that the people in leadership are not living to the standards that they have set, then they turn around and use another scripture to tell you, touch not mine anointed, and
okay.
not to judge. This justifies their behavior. But then it's the whole thing. It's just, it's mind-blowing. And I just, you know, I can't believe that I used to be a part of it. I mean, I stopped believing when I was younger, but when I was older, started believing again because of people around me. The people around me were believers. So I started to go to church and to believe again, and I ended up in the ministry, if you will. And I saw so much. And I've had people say to me, you saw too much, you know too much. And for people to say that to someone that left the ministry, they know it's a farce. They know it's a farce. Tell people what I know. They know it's a farce. And, you know, right now, I'll openly apologize to anybody that I spoke to about the Bible and about God and how you need to be a Christian or a good Christian. I'm sorry.
Ooh, that's deep. Now that needs to go on. You know what? That needs to be one of those campaigns, Kim. I'm sorry to anybody I told I believe something that I really didn't know was true.
Mm-hmm.
And now I know it ain't. You know what I mean? It needs to be a campaign like that. You know? It really should be that right there. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I ever told anybody. They need to read
that's
that.
Beautiful. You're really beautiful. You know that, right?
Say that again.
I said, you're beautiful.
Thank you.
You know that, right?
Thank you.
Like, for you to have just what you just said, you know, you understand what I'm saying? You just don't know.
You know what? I think love is the only religion. Not to sound too philosophical and kumbaya-ish, but I think that love is the ultimate religion, man. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, we all need each other. You know what I'm saying? And I think that with the Christian and the atheist, at the end of the day, they need each other to coexist, because you need an opposite to even recognize anything. So without it actually being an atheist or a Christian, neither one would exist. So you need that polarity to even function in this society, and that's just the truth of the matter. So I mean, whether you call,
I can't get with that.
I disagree with atheism. Yeah. I mean, atheism ain't the opposite of Christianity.
I mean, you feel what I'm saying? Though. I mean, how is it not?
Yeah. If you take from the church the miraculous, the supernatural, the incomprehensible, the unreasonable, the impossible, the unknowable, the absurd, nothing but a vacuum remains.
But I mean, at the end of the day, when somebody says God or Jesus or whatever like that, even though you might consider yourself an atheist, your mind still goes towards the biblical context. Even if you don't agree with that or believe in that, it still goes towards that. Same thing with them. You just say, you know what, that didn't happen and don't exist. They say it did. So, I mean, it's still a polarity,
so
the same thing.
That's only because we live in a culture that's like that. If we was in a different culture, we would be talking mainly about a different type of religion.
Exactly. Well, I mean, it's like I said, it's just the opposite. You know, it's the opposite of the same thing.
But you can be an atheist and not care about secular issues.
What I'm saying is that the mind is still programmed to say what God is the biblical context in the Bible. So whether or not wherever you live at, if your mind goes to that image of a Jesus or God, it's still the same thing. You just don't agree with it.
I just finished telling you that not everybody thinks that way. You would still be an atheist if you didn't believe in God, with or without religion.
Mm-hmm. What you mean?
Because the definition of atheist is non-belief in a deity. So you don't have to not believe in God or Buddha or anything specific. If you just don't believe in a God, whatever that is, that's being an atheist.
You don't have to be not believing in anything specific at all to be an atheist, is what she's saying.
But you still have to, you still you so what you're saying is that you. What you're saying is that when you were atheist that you don't believe in the deity.
Yeah, I don't believe in anything. I don't believe in anything supernatural. But I don't believe in the deity.
Okay, if I just believe in that I had ancestors. That's all I believe.
Well, if you had ancestors, otherwise you wouldn't be here.
Huh?
You know you have ancestors. You don't believe you have ancestors.
Yeah,
you know
well, that's all. I'm just saying that's all I believe in. You understand what I'm saying? That's all I believe in. That I had ancestors. Other than that, I don't believe in anything else.
Yeah, I don't believe in anything supernatural myself. I have no reason to believe in it.
All right, let me take these clothes up out of here. That was never my one.
Kim?
Sorry.
Yeah.
Am I live?
Yeah.
Oh, I just wanted to point out one of the things that you always go back to on just about every show is people actually thinking for themselves and actually going into, you know, their own research and developing, you know, their own conclusion about what it is they actually believe. One of the things I found interesting when I recently went to a funeral for one of my family members is how it was pretty much praised to not fully understand the Word of God, i.e. the Bible, for my family members that are Christians. And I literally was baffled and taken back at the fact that the pastor actually said that you don't have to understand anything
right.
in this book.
Oh,
all
yes.
you have to do is believe. And I heard so many hallelujahs, and I'm just looking around like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know what I mean? And it's freaky knowing that I actually been there once upon a time, and as a person who was on the hunt to be a true Christian, so to speak, I'm just amazed that how I even became an atheist. But when you're looking for truth and, you know, you're actually trying to differentiate the difference between what makes something a fact and what makes something, you know, faith-based or whatnot, it really becomes something, I mean, if you're really thinking critically, it's something that you can't even really control. Like, I feel like in a lot of ways I had no control over what I was seeing in front of me. It's like this stuff doesn't make sense. When I now, you know, reading the Bible and looking at these scriptures for myself as opposed to the good scriptures that the pastors want to talk about or the ones that they want to interpret in their own way, when you actually take the time and you read it, just read it for yourself. It's not even hard to see the hypocrisy in it and how many fallacies is actually in that book.
But you know, but it also tells you straight up, with all that getting, get understanding. It tells you to, that you need to read. You know, tells you to show yourself approved. It tells you that you got to get everything. It tells you that. You know, that's what I'm saying. These preachers are not telling the right. Oh.
Well, no, some of them are actually saying exactly what it is. I mean, some scriptures, I forget exactly where it says, but it says, lead not to your own understanding. So they don't want you to think for yourself.
Yeah,
you
that's
can't
why the Bible contradicts itself.
Exactly.
Well, all the time.
The other day on Mario's show, we were talking about the after death, if you will. And basically, you know, I was showing how the military and, you know, religion, you know, they have some similarities. And I only went into it briefly, but yes, you are taught to turn your brain off. You are taught to do as you are told. You are taught to submit to authority. You are taught, you know, this is where you get the information from. So, you know, with religious people, they get it from the Bible. With, you know, with military people, they get it from the Universal Code of Military Justice. So, I mean, you know, they have a book, they have a manual, you follow it. And you fly under the radar, and you're fine. You know, but it's the minute that you start to question anything or to show that you have, you know, independent thought, critical thinking, that's when you get in trouble. And, you know, it's, again, it goes back to something we've talked about in the past. We've talked about groupthink. We've talked about mob mentality, and maybe we need to go a little bit more in depth with all of those. But, again, we... you know, have to get out here and we have to present this information. We have to inform and educate people because there are a lot of people out here who do not know this information. So that's the reason why, you know, when I hear from some non-believers and atheists and all of that, I understand that you already know the answers to these questions. I know that you've read and you've studied this, but you had to get to that point, and you're there, and that's great. But there are people out here who don't know, and we're trying to reach those people as well. So I just, you know, feel that, you know, you need to have a little bit more temperance, a little bit more understanding and compassion, you know, for these people. And, you know, I'm going to do another Voltaire, you know, quote here. And it is, I think the best way to fall on an infamous is to seem to have no wish to attack it, to disentangle a little chaos and antiquity, to try to make things rather interesting, to make ancient history as agreeable as possible, to show how much we have been misled in all things, to demonstrate how much modern in all things thought ancient, and how ridiculous are many things alleged to be respectable, to let the reader draw his own conclusions. And that's the reason why I say we're here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. You make your own conclusions. You come to your own conclusions. I think that is important. I think it's important for you to think on your own and to research everything that you hear, even what you hear on this show. Because we make mistakes, and there are times when we are in the time. So go out there and research it and be your own person. Believe in yourself. Don't believe in these preachers and these pastors in that book. They're wrong. And they're using you, they're manipulating you so that they can live, so that they don't have to work a day job. If they can convince you to bring in 10% plus of your check to them before you pay your bills, and then they tell you take 10% off your gross, not your net,
they're
used to the... Exactly.
Hey, you know, Ingersoll said that preachers, teachers, that all should give. This is natural. All beggars teach that others should give. Right? All beggars teach that others should give.
And that's one thing I will say, you know, that I've encountered with some believers, that if they don't know how to do anything else, they know how to beg.
Yeah.
They know how to say, you know, you're blessed to be able to bless me, or, you know, it's a blessing to be able to bless others. And, you know, but, you know, they're the ones being blessed by your hard work. And, again, it's about, you know, manipulating the proletariat, the working class people.
Right.
And that's what they're doing in creating, you know, somewhat of a vacuum there, because it's like perpetual poverty in many of these instances. You know, you have people that will buy their choir robe or buy a book that the pastor wrote or any of these things before they spend the money to send their children to after-school activities. You know, extracurricular activities that will help the kid win a scholarship.
Kim,
I mean, so it's just priorities are backwards. Yes, dear. Go ahead.
Kim, I would like to see a show done on the on the Illuminati, because I'm getting a lot of, I didn't realize how popular this topic really was. I'm getting a lot of people coming at me,
even when they come
out of the actual religious indoctrination, they seem to always have to have this need to have an adversary. So now that it becomes that they're free from the indoctrination of the Christian belief system, now they're, you know, constantly asking about the Illuminati. And I think that, you know, it's the same type of mentality, just being using different characters and different players, to where you have to have to, now it's not the devil anymore, now it's just, you know, whole Illuminati thing. So it should be a show, man, where we dedicate to this whole
thing. The Illuminati?
Yeah.
Well, actually,
can't all that be knocked out by saying, I don't believe that there are any group of super smart people that are smarter than me pulling the strings, because there's no puppet master.
Exactly. But we did two shows, Raina and myself, we did two shows each on conspiracy theories, even though we didn't really go in depth about the Illuminati, but I remember making one point in particular about how the Illuminati is replacing religion and how now, and again, you know, yeah, it's a new adversary, if you will.
Uh-huh.
And it's my belief that Christians made up the Illuminati as a replacement because they evolved. They have
exactly.
to evolve. They have to find another way to control people. And
right.
I just feel that the Illuminati was created, you know, as, you know, the people transitioning out of Christianity. So, you know, when people left Christianity, they become spiritual, but yet they hold on to the conspiracy theories and the Illuminati and things of that nature. So I believe that it's a substitute. It's a very handy substitute.
Exactly, exactly.
Kim, those Illuminati shows for the fella around there that's looking for those, you can find them in Blog Talk Radio. One of them is from August 18th, and the one right behind it is August 19th. Conspiracy Theories Part 1, NWO and Illuminati, and Part 2 the next day. And if you have an Apple product, you can snag them right there in iTunes.
Okay, all right, you already did it. All right, now I'm good on the Illuminati. I'm just saying, I'm just seeing a lot of people out here, you know, asking a lot of questions about it, like they're scared about it. So I thought that maybe that would be a topic. But if y'all already touched on it, cool.
Yeah, but that boogeyman thing, right? So if this boogeyman, like, there are preachers who can fill up their collection plates just preaching against gay persons. Right?
Yeah.
And people can fill their, God, I don't like homosexuality.
Yeah.
And then fill it on up.
Yeah.
Every time there's 2 inches of rain, it's because of gay people.
Okay.
And probably find some new dick. Bitch, I need some help. I'm thinking about ass. Really? Come on my house on Friday night.
And if God keeps bringing all this bad stuff down on the gay people, how come West Hollywood and San Francisco have such great weather? Seems awesome where the gay people are.
You know, out here in Washington, where I live right now, in Seattle, Washington, marriage equality and marijuana legalization both passed, and so that makes Seattle the capital of happy people who just want to be happy.
Yeah, and that's recreational marijuana at that. That's not, you don't have to get a medical card. That's recreational achievement. So you can smoke a joint at a lesbian wedding reception.
Yes, the DA over here on this side of the mountain already got rid of all cases that were on the books for a possession. Everybody just got let off black just like that. And over in East Washington, which is like more red area, they said they're gonna wait till they're gonna have to wait till December 6th. Okay,
We're down to our last 2.5 minutes here. For next Sunday's show, I'm not sure if I'm going to do a show next Sunday because I will be somewhere that has little people, and I'm not quite sure how that's going to work out. But if we do a show, next Sunday, I actually want to talk about the prison system. You know, because I talked a little bit about it last week, about, you know, the prison system and how it's set up. And, you know, I hit on quite a few things last week. And when I was watching Melissa Harris Perry this morning, basically, you know, I want to talk about the prison system and the mental ill and mental health care issues. So that's probably what we'll talk about next Sunday if we have a show. If we don't have a show, it'll be the Sunday after that, and we definitely will be talking about the prison industrial complex and mental health care. We're going to tie it all in, and then we can also, in addition to talking to mental health care, we can talk about drugs as well. I just think that's something that we need to address and we need to talk about. So that will be our next show. Until then, even though I may not necessarily believe or celebrate these holidays, I'm not turning down a good meal. I will be enjoying one Thursday at the courtesy of my beloved sister. So you guys, much love, much love. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for being a part of the show. And again, you know, we have more shows coming up. This is the end of the year. We will have our lineup listed soon for next year. We have a new show, The Barbershop, which will be introduced in January. And they will be the opposite Saturdays of regular show, the RSS feed, Reason, Science, and Skepticism. So they will be every other Saturday. Raina's every other Saturday. We're getting that lined up. Mario's show every other Friday. Check out the After Death. That was a fantastic show from this past Friday evening. We love you. We love you. And when I say that, I'm talking to everyone, the non-believers as well as the believers, because
yeah.
I am pretty open-minded because I used to be one of you, and I have plenty of believers in my family that don't understand me. But they...
That's right.
Love you. Have a good weekend, everybody. Take care.
You too. Have a good one. Thank y'all.
Happy Thankfulness Day.
Oh
there
yeah,
go.
we gotta talk about that Christmas birthday.
All right, let's talk about it through a burning